This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After today, half a dozen Supreme Court decisions remain to be handed down before the 4th of July holiday weekend, including much-anticipated rulings on display of the Ten Commandments and on digital technology file transfers. There's also considerable speculation about whether Chief Justice William Rehnquist may announce plans to retire. But in the meantime, the court issued a ruling today in a case that tests the limits of eminent domain. Seven families who live in a working-class area of New London, Connecticut, fought to keep their homes from being demolished to make way for a corporate office park. The city said that the public benefit, economic development, new jobs, outweighed private property rights. In a 5-4 decision, the court ruled in favor of the city. Later in this hour, Republicans in Congress introduce new Social Security plans, some with less emphasis on private accounts, one that leaves them out altogether. We'll talk about the proposals and about the politics. And Congress takes its game to the major leagues tonight, well, to a major league ballpark anyway. We'll preview the annual congressional baseball game. But first, property rights and the Constitution. Who wins and who loses from the expansion of eminent domain? Is this an issue where you live? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is David Savage, Supreme Court reporter for the Los Angeles Times. He's with us by phone from his office here in Washington. David, how you doing?
Hello, Neil.
Remind us of the facts of this case. The city of New London, this is a case where the city condemned property under eminent domain but wanted to turn it over to another private company.
Yes, that's right. It was one of these redevelopment schemes that had been approved by the state. The state said New London was a depressed area. And Pfizer, the drug firm, had opened a big research complex there. And the city wanted to add an office complex and a marina and a hotel and sort of redevelop the whole downtown area. And there were a few homeowners who, some of whom had lived their whole lives there and simply refused to sell. So it became one of these classic cases of the individual's right to, in this case, stay in her own home versus the community's power to bring about the economic rebirth.
And remind us, what are the limits on eminent domain?
Well, apparently there are not many limits. The Constitution has a phrase that says private property shall not be taken for public use without just compensation. So just compensation wasn't the issue here. The city was willing to pay these people. But the question was, is taking somebody's private home for business development, is that public use? Early on, there's a long and interesting history on this. The court has not revisited this subject much. But, you know, early on in the country's history, a road, a military base, a canal or something like that was a public use. In the 19th century, railroads were able to seize property because railroads were considered a public use. In the mid-20th century, the court had a decision involving Washington, D.C., a slum clearance project. And the court basically said that if the government is trying to clean up blight or slums, it can redevelop an area and even seize stores that are doing quite well. Some of the homes might have been bad in the area, but a store owner challenged that. Ever since then, there's been the notion that the government has broad eminent domain power, but there has to be something like they're dealing with blight. I think today's opinion goes further than the court's ever gone before in saying you don't have to have blight that you're clearing up. There's nothing wrong with these, 8 or 10 private homes. The government just said we could do better as a city. We could have an economic rebirth if we can redevelop this whole area. And the court said that's good enough.
And in dissents, several justices said this is a ruling for the wealthy and against the poor.
Yes, Justice Thomas noted that decision I referred to, 97% of the persons who had their homes seized were black. He made the point that most of the time, these urban renewal and redevelopment plans fall on poor people, black people, the elderly. As I understand it, this issue has these days arises quite often around the country where a Walmart or a Costco wants to go into an area. And the city officials are in favor of some of these big box retailers coming in, and they essentially can use their power to condemn small stores and clear out the land and put in a big box retailer. So I think that's where this decision will have its real impact.
Well, wasn't there some zoning elements to this story that the area where they wanted to redevelop had never been zoned as a residential area? It had always been for business.
Yes, although I don't think those issues about zoning and the sort of particularities of this particular case ended up tipping the court one way or the other. Justice Stevens basically said, for the majority, we understand the phrase public use to mean public purpose. And if the city's purpose is to create more jobs, to increase tax revenue, that's good enough, and we're not going to second guess it.
Let's get some callers on the line if you'd like to weigh in on the subject of eminent domain and the Constitution. Our number is 800-989-8255. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org. And Scott is on the line with us from Alameda, California.
You know, the thing that scares me the most about this ruling, and I'm thinking in particular of the small town where I live, there's a large piece of property in a very highly real estate market where there is a, you know, private owner of this property who wants it to leave it undeveloped, and there are several different developers who are just drooling to get their hands on this property. And now somebody who's a wealthy developer could basically install a mayor into the city government who would then appoint people, you know, who could rule the eminent domain on this property, sell it to this developer at tax assessor values, which are far, far below market value, basically steal the property from the person who owns it, to give it to a wealthy developer to then personally profit at the other person's expense, and, you know, there's no place to go.
Scott is, David, is Scott right?
He may be right. I mean, that was part of the debate between some of the justices here. Is this going to allow transfers from one private person to another? Justice Kennedy, who cast the sort of fifth and deciding vote for the majority, said, well, if there's a suspicious dealing like this, like the kind of example that Scott, that courts ought to take a look at that. They shouldn't be able to uphold schemes where they're really not public projects. They're really schemes to benefit some wealthy land developer or whatever. But the dissenter said, how in the world is a judge going to police that? I mean, the courts really can't police that. If people are working through the government, how's the court going to know it's suspicious and stop it? So it's a little unclear. I think that situation Scott alludes to is one of the real concerns coming out of this decision.
Especially when the Supreme Court has now set down a precedent, legal precedent. That's what lawyers use when they go in front of a judge and they say, Your Honor, legal precedent dictates that you rule in our favor because the Supreme Court has laid down the law of the land.
Yes, that's right.
Scott, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Scott asking about a small town, this from Tim in Ann Arbor asking about a big one. I'm very curious if today's SCOTUS ruling might have special implications for cities requiring redevelopment on a very large scale. For example, Detroit. I find myself envisioning this new opinion allowing for a city to completely redevelop itself.
I think it would, if the Detroit officials want to do that, this opinion is great news for them because they can basically do, as Scott said, to say the Supreme Court has really given its stamp of approval to this. And if we come up with a big redevelopment plan, it's got a clear public purpose. You know, we want to redevelop, bring new jobs to the city. We can seize a lot of stores or homes or businesses, whatever, that are actually doing quite well. But maybe the city could get more money if there was, say, a high-rise office building rather than a little store. Justice O'Connor had a line in dissent saying, nothing is to prevent the state from replacing any Motel 6 with a Ritz-Carlton, any home with a shopping mall, or any farm with a factory. In other words, her view is if economic development and more tax revenue is all you need, there's all kinds of examples of how cities could use or misuse that power.
Let's get Adam on the line. Adam's with us from Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Hi, guys. I'm really liking the show. I had a question about the technicalities as far as what right were the homeowners claiming that was being violated here? I'm guessing it might have been the due process clause in the 14th Amendment. And specifically, what did the judges say about whatever right that the homeowners thought was violated, and why was it not being violated?
Well, the technical issue here wasn't the due process clause per se. It was this provision in the Fifth Amendment that says private property shall not be taken for public use without just compensation. There are very few cases on this. As I say, the last big one was in 1954. But a matter of public use. Is taking this woman's home and putting an office complex in its place, is that the government acting out of public use? And so that really was the debate.
Adam, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
The 5-4 split, David, you'd think property rights would fall right into the wheelhouse of a lot of the conservatives on the Supreme Court.
You would think so, Neil. And a few years ago, I would have told you that was one of the real strengths of the Rehnquist Court. We've had a series of decisions where the property rights movement has really faded, Rehnquist has lost the majority on this issue. We had a decision a couple years ago involving Lake Tahoe and homeowners, and they'd put on a moratorium and said nobody could build for a couple years. And hundreds of people had bought little lots at Lake Tahoe. And the question was, is that a taking of private property? And the court said basically no, that if you're going to have government planning and environmental protection, we have to give public officials the power to freeze development and freeze a building. And we've had a couple cases since then, and each time it's a matter of the government has been winning and the court refusing to say the property rights provisions in the Constitution outweigh the government's interest. And so this is a situation where the liberal members of the court are on the side of the government and saying we judges shouldn't be second-guessing elected city councils and state legislatures when they see a need to carry out these projects. And the conservatives are on the side of the individual property rights saying, wait a minute, you're ignoring a basic right in the Constitution. But in this case, as in a lot of the recent ones, they have tilted a little bit in favor of the government and against property rights.
David Savage, thanks very much. And get some rest this weekend. Looks like you could have a pretty busy day on Monday.
Thanks a lot, Neil.
David Savage is the Supreme Court correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He joined us from his office here in Washington, D.C. Coming up next, Republicans have some new proposals on how to deal with Social Security. We'll get into the details and take your questions. 1-800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Also, emails, totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan, back after the break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.